I'm the tech reporter at KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show. Show number 24. Phone lines are now open at 888-RICH-101, 888-742-4101. Give me a call if you have a question about technology. Email is also open. Send it to hello@richontech.tv. Welcome to the show. Lots to talk about. Back from the weekend at the ranch, back at the studio. The sun is actually shining in Los Angeles for a change, which I know sounds odd, but Los Angeles has had the oddest 6 months of weather I can remember ever in the time I've been here, except for El Nino. That was also odd. That was just a lot of rain. But this was like, for the past 6 months, we've just had overcast skies, which I know not that big of a deal, but it kind of is in Los Angeles, a city that promises endless sunshine. So we are finally breaking out of that and getting some sun. So I imagine more people will be outside. But anyway, why do I tell you that? I don't really know. It's just because it puts everyone in a good mood, I think. It's just nice to have that sun shining. It feels like there's a promise in this world, the promise of a better future, a sunny day ahead. Well, I got snagged. Can you believe it? It happened to me. I was talking about it on this very show, and the very thing I talked about happened to me. I will tell you, I got snagged by this whole Netflix password sharing crackdown. It happened to me, Rich on Tech. Here's what happened. After I came back from the Apple event, I was all hyped up about the whole Vision Pro, their virtual reality headset, augmented reality headset, whatever you want to call it. And so I said, you know what? Let me charge up the old Oculus again and see how that thing does. And so I charged it up and I was like, let me just see kind of some of the apps that I might use on this thing. And so Netflix was the first app that I opened on it. And so I had to sign in on Netflix, which was impossible with the headset because they want you to, number one, it said scan a QR code to log in. I was like, how can you scan a QR code that's inside a headset? Like, that makes no sense. So clearly they've sort of optimized the app for the Oculus, but not really enough. And then it was like, okay, well, enter this code into your phone. Okay, I'll enter the code. Now, the difference between the Oculus and the Apple Vision Pro is that you can't really see your surroundings. You kind of can with the Oculus, but not really. Apple Vision Pro, I would have been able to just look at my phone and also look at the screen in front of me. That's not the case. So I had to take off the headset, remember the number, pop it in on my phone, and I did that, which was fine. That linked my account. And then I got a message. I have it right here. I printed it out just for you. It says, "This TV isn't part of your Netflix household. Create an account to enjoy your own Netflix today." And I said, well, that's odd because I've been paying $20 a month for Netflix for as long as I can remember. And yes, I have a Netflix account. And yes, this is part of my household. So what happened? It says, "Did we get it wrong? You have options. You can update your Netflix household," or it says, "I'm traveling." You can press those buttons. Well, neither of those things. I guess the update the Netflix household was my first guess. So I said, all right, let me update my Netflix household. And then it all made sense. I got a text a couple of weeks ago that said, "Your Netflix household has been set." And I was like, that's odd because I didn't set my Netflix household. Turns out someone who had my password in my family set the household where they live, which is not where I live. And so I know. Should you be sharing your password? Probably not. Do 100 million people do it? Yes, that's what Netflix said. 43% of its global user base shares their password. Well, not anymore. So what I had to do was embark on a journey to try to reset my household, to claim my Netflix account as mine, which I know sounds silly because I'm the one paying for it. But here I am proving to Netflix that it is my house, that I want to watch this thing on my own headset in my own home. So it said you can only do this from a TV. And so I said, all right, well, that's easy enough. I've got two TVs here with Netflix, so let me go. So I fired up the Netflix app on the Apple TV, and it says to go into your account and click update Netflix household, which I just couldn't do. That button was nowhere to be found on an Apple TV. And so it took me a while to realize that the Apple TV software is clearly different from the other Netflix software anywhere else, and I wasn't going to be able to use my Apple TV to update my household. Then I figured, okay, well, let's go to the Fire TV, because Android software is usually a bit more flexible, usually different than what Apple has out there. So let me see if the button appears on that device. So I go to the TV that has the Fire Stick. I fire up Netflix. I go into the settings where it says update your household. And sure enough, there's the button. It says update Netflix household. And so I click the button, and lo and behold, it says your household has been updated. I can now watch Netflix. I was able to log in on the headset. I was able to watch it on my Apple TV. I was able to watch it on this TV. But what happened? All my password leechers around the U.S., my family members, lost access immediately. And I told them, I texted them. I said, heads up. I sent to our group chat. I said, heads up. The free ride is over. You have enjoyed Netflix for many, many years for free. I didn't mind. It seemed like Netflix didn't really care. But now the free ride is over. Netflix is no longer free for you. And so I sent this. Nobody in my family said anything back, but I know a couple of them were affected. And sure enough, I am talking to a family member later, about 2 or 3 days later. And I said, family member that will remain unnamed. I said, have you noticed that you don't have any access to Netflix anymore? And they said, yeah, I did notice. Now I've got nothing to watch. And I said, well, you know, I have been paying your bill for like, you know, 5 years now. And they said, you know what? I was talking to a friend about this because the same thing happened to them. Their son was paying for their Netflix bill and their free ride is over. So clearly this crackdown is working. In fact, I have some numbers here from Antenna. This is a company, I guess, that monitors this stuff. Netflix had the four single biggest days of U.S. signups in the 4.5 years since this Antenna company has tracked data. On May 26th and May 27th, this was right in the wake of Netflix's big crackdown, there were almost 100,000 signups every day. During each of the 4 days, the company saw an average of 73,000 new memberships, according to Antenna. So clearly, my little password crackdown story was resonating around the U.S. as everyone sort of realized, oh, this little game is over. We can no longer share our Netflix accounts. Now, I'm not saying this was right or this was a good thing to do, but the reality was Netflix looked a different way for many, many years. And there's a lot of questions about this. Well, people are emailing me. I have an RV. How's it going to work with that? I have a kid in college. How's it going to work with that? Netflix has a whole bunch of ways of figuring out where these sort of households are. It says we use information such as IP addresses, device IDs, and account activity to determine whether a device is signed into your account as part of your Netflix household. We do not use GPS data to try to determine the precise physical location of your devices. So basically, if you're traveling, if you've got a kid at college, these are all probably use cases where it's going to be fine. Because the idea is that kid from college will bring their laptop back to home every once in a while, and maybe you have to make a case for the TV there. I'm not sure. But the reality is, to bring this all home, the family member I was talking to said, I said, you know what, it's time for you to get your own account. And they said, actually, it's a little bit cheaper if you continue to pay, but it's $8 a month and you can pay for an extra person and I will pay you back. I said, all right, I guess we can try to do that. So, I mean, a Netflix account is about $16 a month, for the standard one. And so eight is half of that. So I guess their reasoning's pretty good. Anyway, if you're having those issues with a family member, you do know that you can give them their own account. They can transfer their profile, or you can just sign up for an extra account on your account and pay the extra $8. I don't know how I'm going to ask my family member to pay me $8 a month. I mean, come on. That's kind of going to be tough. All right. We got a great show coming up today. Lots going on. Couple of great guests. Dan Seifer of The Verge is going to join me with his review of the Amazon Fire Max 11 tablet. We've got food writer Jason Horn. We went to an event where we ate lab-grown mozzarella cheese. Yeah, kind of interesting. So we'll talk about that and why they're doing that. Then later in the show, we're going to talk diabetes technology. So we've got Justin Easter, founder and host of Diabetech. Diabetic. He did a nice play on the words with that. But first, your questions coming up. Give me a call at 888-RICH-101. That's 888-742-4101. I see the lines are already lit up. So we'll take some of your calls right after this. You are listening to Rich on Tech. Welcome back to Rich on Tech. Rich DeMuro here, hanging out with you, talking technology at 888-RICH-101. That's 888-742-4101. You got a question, you got a comment, hop on the phone, give me a call. I'm all ears. I didn't think I'd say that on this show, but you know what? Sometimes you just do. It just happens. I'm trying to get a special guest on the show today, too. So we'll work on that for a moment. They're getting a little shy, but we'll see if we can get them on. Let's go to Peter in Amesbury, Massachusetts. Peter, you're on with Rich.
I can't be the special guest.
Well, you're special, but there's okay. Other special guests.
Okay. As I told you on the screen, I'm having an issue with my phone. Basically, it's a smartphone that's been hit with a brick now.
Oh, wow. Like literally?
So basically, I can't, well, not literally, but I think it's, I've gone through some issues with, you know, the settings were maybe wrong, and then the texting wouldn't work at all on certain days, and I discovered if you shut it off, let it sit for a couple hours, it would be fine. And so bottom line is right now, I can send a text and get a text, but it doesn't keep a record of my what I said. I can make a phone call and get a phone call. Nothing else works. It's basically becoming a pretty brick. So I'm thinking about a new phone, and I'm trying to avoid, you know, different people. The person you took over for on Sunday, Leo, I talked to him, and basically at one point we got to a point where it's like, well, there's something to be said for a newer phone, meaning what I hear from people around me in this area is, they'll send you an update to help your phone, but because your phone is a little bit older, guess what? It screws up your phone. So you're supposed to run out and spend.
No. You don't need a new phone necessarily. What kind of phone are we talking about here?
We're talking about a Samsung S10e.
Okay, so that is definitely an older phone. The Samsung S10e. Let's see when that came out. Samsung S10e. The S10, that was in 2019. Okay, so we're talking 4 years old. Is this, so here's what I'd recommend. So nothing's working with the, this is not a 5G phone, is it? Is it a 4G still?
It's a 4.
Okay, so that could be part of the issue, is that a lot of these networks have moved to 5G, but 4G still works.
Correct.
What I think you should do, and have you tried this? Have you tried a factory reset to sort of start fresh on this phone?
I have not, but right now, like even like, say, apps that you have on the phone, if you say, okay, you know, update. Even when I go to, say, my brother's house, which will automatically hop onto the internet, you know, the Wi-Fi, it won't do anything.
Okay. So I think there's a couple things you should do here. So first off, okay, before you do anything, have you tried a network settings reset?
Are you talking the APM?
Nope. Network settings. There's a reset of the phone. So if you go into the reset menu on your phone, so if you go into settings and search reset, there's a an option in there that says reset all settings, reset network settings, reset accessibility settings. What I would first try to do is reset the network settings. What that's going to do is that is going to clear out all of your settings for your cellular, for your Wi-Fi, for your Bluetooth. And then when your phone and then restart your phone, obviously, when you restart your phone, all of those things are going to try to reconnect. And so you're going to have to reconnect to Wi-Fi. It's going to find the cellular network. It's going to download those APNs that you talked about that, you know, most people never really have to deal with on their phone because those are set automatically. And it's going to reset the Bluetooth settings. Now, if your phone still isn't working, if you still can't send and receive data, all that stuff through Wi-Fi, then there's another option that says reset all settings. And so now you can go through and that will reset your security settings, your language, your accounts, all your personal data, all of your settings for your downloaded apps. It's kind of like the last thing you can do before you actually do a factory reset. Now, if that doesn't work, if you get your phone to work after that, that's great. So what I'd immediately do is do a system update. And I'm looking at the latest Verizon update for this phone was in March. So depending on the carrier that you have, it seems like this phone is still getting a couple of security updates, which is pretty good for a four-year-old phone. That's kind of like the break-off point, the cutoff point for phones nowadays is about 4 years. So if all that doesn't work and you can't update your apps and you can't update your software, because I definitely do a software update after that. And by doing that, you go into your settings again and you go into, let's see, where is that? Settings. It says software update. You download and install that. Make sure you got that working. And then if you can't get any of that to work, you got to do the final nuclear option, which is the factory reset. And so if you do a factory reset, and that will reset everything. This will bring your phone back to the exact conditions that it was when you got it from the first day you had it. And it will start fresh. You're going to have to reinstall everything. You're going to have to sign in to Google and all these different accounts that you have on there. So make sure things are backed up before you do that. But if your phone doesn't work after that, then it is time for a new phone. So those are all of the steps I would take personally, but you can use this phone, I think, for another year. So if you get all those things to work, unless there is a physical problem with the hardware on this phone, then you should still be able to use it. So it should still be supported at this point. All right. Great question, Pete. Thanks so much. And I know everyone likes to just say, get a new phone, get a new phone. We live in the culture here in America of just throw it out, toss it away, get a new one. When things go wrong, you don't necessarily need to do that. These things are built much, much better these days, and they last much longer. And sometimes it's really just a software issue. Thanks for the call. All right. Hop on the line. 888-RICH-101-888-742-4101. Coming up next, we've got Dan Seifert, deputy editor at The Verge. He is going to join us to have his review of the Amazon Fire Max 11 tablet. You are listening to Rich on Tech. Joining me now is Dan Seifert, deputy editor at The Verge. He recently reviewed the Amazon Fire Max 11 tablet. This is Amazon's latest tablet. I've got one right here so we can compare notes, Dan. Let's get straight to the review. Thanks for joining me today. I do appreciate it. Fire Max 11, this on paper had a lot of promise for me. But your headline kind of says it all, not the productivity tablet you're looking for. So kind of give me the kind of your synopsis of your review of this thing.
Yeah, so I mean, I would agree with you in that it held a lot of promise on paper. This is like Amazon's brand new tablet. It's got their fastest processor they've ever put in a tablet, the nicest hardware they've used on a tablet in a long time. So it's like markedly better looking than the lower tier Amazon tablets that we're familiar with. But once you get like past those first looks and you start using it, you realize that it is effectively the exact same experience. And the problem that I've had with Amazon tablets for a long time, especially ones that are kind of trying to market as beyond just basic media consumption, but for productivity and stuff like that, Amazon's selling this as a bundle with a keyboard and a stylus and things like that, is that Amazon doesn't build any of the software that's necessary to make all use of all of that. So it's very hard to like kind of actually get work done on this when you don't have the apps or services that you might be looking for or accustomed to.
Yeah. So you might save half the price of buying an iPad similarly equipped, but then all of a sudden you get this thing and you're like, wait a second. Okay. So Office is installed on this thing as a 90-day free trial. Microsoft 365, but it's one of those things where it doesn't feel like a tablet where you're meant to do work on it. It feels like a tablet where you're meant to watch movies, read books, and basically try not to do much else because it's a very frustrating operating system. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Yeah. And you can see that right from the home screen, right? Like Amazon's had the same basic home screen on its tablets for, I don't know how many years now. But it's effectively just kind of like showing you things to watch, things to read, and things to buy from Amazon.
It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. I'll just say it. Here's the thing. With this tablet, if they had a nice, clean version of Android installed on this tablet, it would be incredible. And if you can install the apps that you want, the first thing I did was try to install Chrome. Guess what? You can't. I mean, you could probably sideload it somehow, but the average person that's buying this tablet is not trying to sideload this thing, I don't think.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I agree with you there.
So, I mean, the apps, and so Amazon has their own app store. They've got their own software, and it's all geared towards selling you or helping you watch Prime Video, any Amazon product. So why are they so protective of this? Like, why couldn't they just make this better and still sell a lot of them?
So I think it's a multi-pronged problem for Amazon. One, I think their business model just kind of leads them to this type of product, because their business model is really not making money on the hardware that they're selling you. It's making money on the books that you're buying, and like you mentioned, the Prime subscription that you pay for to get Prime Video, or the other thing that is all over the home screen is literal products that it thinks you want to buy from Amazon. So like, their business model kind of drives them towards that experience. The other thing is they don't have what we call Google services on this tablet. So you, like you mentioned, you can't download Chrome. There's no Gmail. There's no Google Maps. If you've got an Android phone, you're used to all of those apps and services on the phone. And then you go to this tablet and it's like none of them are available. Basically, the only thing that's available is, as you mentioned, Microsoft Office Suite and very scattered few random apps that you've probably never heard of in Amazon's pretty small, anemic app store. So to fix that, they would have to partner with Google, which they haven't seemed to want to do in the 10 or 12 years that they've been making Fire tablets. And or they would have to really court developers to get their apps into Amazon's app store. And either developers just don't want to do it because they don't see the return on their investment, or Amazon just hasn't put the effort into making it worthwhile for those developers.
I mean, it's so frustrating that even YouTube is not available as a native app on this device, which is available on pretty much any device around the world that you get that has, you know.
The list of apps that you can't get on an Amazon Fire tablet is much longer than the list of apps you can get.
Okay. Now, for the positive side of this thing, so I had my kids try Roblox on it. They said it was fine. I had them try Minecraft. It seemed to be fast. Zoom, we did a Zoom call, and the camera actually was better than my kid's camera on his MacBook. He's got a 16-inch MacBook. So those things were fine, and Zoom ran just fine. But who is this best for? Because I feel like people buy these tablets and they return them a lot.
Yeah, it's hard for me to pin down who this is exactly best for. Like, it is better than Amazon's prior tablets in that, you know, it's got a faster processor, better performance. Amazon's tablets kind of have a deserved reputation for being slow and pokey and stuff like that because they're so cheap. But my kind of perspective on that is, if all you're doing is getting into a video streaming app, which is like, say you're just watching something from Max or Paramount Plus or Amazon Prime or whatever, you don't really need the fastest tablet in the world. And the experience between this and the, I believe it's like $80 cheaper Fire 10 is not that much different for that. Perhaps if it's, you know, a kid that has games, Amazon does have a really, the one piece of software that they do actually pretty well is their kids mode. So it's very easy for parents to kind of say, I'm setting this up for a child aged, say, 7 to 10, and I want them to access this, this, and this, but not this, this, and this, and then just hand it off to them, and they get, like, a very curated experience, which is still a lot harder to do with an iPad. It's not as easy to do on other Android tablets. Amazon really does that experience really well. But are you going to buy the top-end version of Amazon's tablet to hand it to a kid and stuff like that? I find that hard to believe. So I'm not really sure who this is for. I assume at some point Amazon's going to put it on sale like it does with all of its products, and then it will be maybe more of a compelling purchase as like kind of just a nicer version of its existing 10-inch tablets. But I don't think it's for anybody who thinks that, oh, I'm going to buy a tablet to knock out some email and compose documents and get collaborate with my colleagues and work and stuff instead of using my laptop. That's just really not what this device provides.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the product listing page. It's $230. Looks like it's available now. It does say on there, we want you to know the Fire tablet does come with lock screen ads. So that's another kind of punch in the gut there. Because if you want this without the ads, you got to pay even more. And then it says Google Play is not supported on Amazon Fire tablets, which I think would probably be confusing to a lot of people. They'd be like, what does that mean? You know?
Right.
And then the other thing is that I do like is, the expandable memory is kind of nice. So you can put in up to a 1 terabyte card, which, you know, maybe you need that, maybe you don't. How did you find the battery life to be?
You know, I really didn't have a problem with the battery life. And I think that part of that is because I just ended up in a lot of scenarios where I couldn't get what I needed to get done on it. So I had to move to a different device. But even for like basic video streaming and stuff like that, like I think with most tablets these days, whether they're an iPad or a Fire tablet or a Samsung tablet, I really don't worry too much about the battery life. They last 10 to 12 hours and like, you know, you're going to use it all day and then it'll last the cross country flight, which is the longest that most people use these at a stretch. So the battery life, I don't think is a problem at all. And even the performance wasn't that bad. It's not as fast or snappy as Apple's iPads, but I didn't have any problems where like I was sitting there waiting for things to load or it wouldn't respond to my inputs or anything like that.
And the screen, the first thing I noticed when I took it out of the box, I was expecting a nice screen, and the screen looks like it's from 5-6 years ago. It's just, it's not that clear. It's not that bright. And I hate to knock this thing because I really want to like this and be able to recommend this to people because it's a nice, simple tablet. But I just feel like the software just really hampers this. And unless you are literally just watching, you know, videos or maybe just playing Roblox or maybe just, you know, kind of doing that, there's really not much more you can do on this thing. Like even surfing the web is not fun because you're kind of tied to Bing and like all these different things that they try to trick you on. And it's not a very good experience. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I would love for Amazon to kind of go back to the drawing board and revisit its software experience and really like, you know, the hardware is the hardware, and for $230, I don't really have a lot to complain about the hardware, but the software just kind of ruins the whole experience for me.
Someone needs to come up with a one-click install of, like, clean Android software for this device, and it would be amazing. All right, Dan Seifert, we're going to leave it there. Deputy editor at The Verge, where can folks find you these days online?
You can find me at The Verge. That's probably the best place to look. You can also find me on Mastodon if you happen to use that. I don't find myself using Twitter very much anymore these days, but you can definitely find all of my work and a lot of my thoughts and musings on The Verge.
Awesome. Dan Seifert from The Verge, thank you so much for joining me today. Coming up, I'm going to tell you about this email that you probably got, an update to Album Archive. Google killing another product. I'll explain what that's all about, plus more of your calls at 888-RICH-101, 888-742-4101. You are listening to Rich on Tech. Let's go to Brian in Westport, Washington. Brian, you're on with Rich. Thanks for calling up today.
Sure. Hopefully, this will be a fun question for you. Can tech executives themselves be replaced by artificial intelligence? You got your ear to all the tech stuff. Is it possible that's the reason why they're so concerned about AI, is that they themselves could get replaced in their own jobs? What do you think?
Ooh, good question. You know, I think that at this point, anyone is up for grabs. Any job is up for grabs when it comes to AI. So we are just at the beginning of AI. We are just figuring out what it can do, the power of this technology. And there's been many, many studies. I'm looking at one here. You know, according to experts, tools like ChatGPT have the potential to disrupt certain jobs, especially those in white collar professions, intermediate level skills and experience. Some jobs that are at risk include coders, computer programmers, software engineers, data analysts. AI can number crunch and code faster than humans. Then you've got media jobs, advertising, content creation, technical writing, and also journalism could be affected because these things are so efficient at writing. Then you've got the legal industry. Jobs like paralegals and legal assistants could be impacted because AI can handle these language and structured tasks. And then, of course, you have market research analysts, teachers, finance industry jobs, traders, graphic designers, accountants, and customer service agents, all up for grabs when it comes to disruption by AI. Now, here's the thing. Many experts believe that AI is going to be a productivity enhancing tool rather than just a complete replacement for human workers. But at the same time, you have to keep in mind that there will be some fallout from this. Now, I can tell you personally what I'm using AI for already on a daily basis. And it is kind of like the way I think about it, and we debate this stuff in my family all the time, because my kids say, oh, well, nobody's going to have to write a paper for school and this and that. Well, here's what's happening. We as humans are getting more of our brain freed up to do even higher tasks than we used to have to be able to do. Let me give you an example. So when I post a Instagram reel, right, to my Instagram at Rich on Tech, it used to take me a couple of minutes to come up with a couple of hashtags for that reel, that video. If it was a video that I just posted the other day about a hologram, I would think, okay, hologram, holographic, 3D video chat, video chatting. And I'd have to sit there and really think about some of these terms that might work for that reel and get people to click on it. Well, now what do? I just copy my script that I wrote for the video into Bard, which is Google's version of ChatGPT, and I say, give me 10 Instagram hashtags for this. And within seconds, I've got my 10 hashtags. I copy, I paste them, I put them into Instagram. Now, did that ruin my job? No. Now, did it ruin some apps that I might have turned to pay for to get those hashtags? Absolutely. There's a whole cottage industry of services and apps and things that will be disrupted by this technology because you just don't need them anymore. Let me give you another example. Summarizing things. You want to summarize an article. You can use an extension on Chrome to summarize that article. Something that may have taken someone, let's say you have a producer for your show, like for me, for a radio show. You may have had a producer that would summarize things for you and give you notes on your guests. Well, now you can do that all in 5 seconds on ChatGPT or Google Bard. Hey, give me a brief background on this person. Comparing things. I mean, shopping. It is so powerful. I've been using the new Google search. It is so powerful. I can't tell you how incredible it is. It's so good that I actually am considering a switch to an Android phone to have better access to this stuff. I've actually set up my iPhone in a different way just to get better and easier access to the Google Bard system when I do my searches. So will the executives be replaced? Yes, some of them will be. Will I be replaced? Will the person next be replaced? Who knows? This is all too new to know exactly what it's going to replace and the impact it's going to have. But the bottom line is, it is going to have a major impact on our world, and there is no going back. That is for sure. All right, coming up on the show, we still got lots to talk about. I'm going to explain this album archive from Google. I'm going to do that right when we come back because I know I've been talking about it for a bit. Then later in the show, we've got some great guests. We're going to talk about lab-grown cheese. And then later, diabetes tech. Plus, if you want to hop on the phone, give me a call, 888-RICH-101. That's 888-742-4101. You are listening to Rich on Tech. Looks like we've got a line open, so give me a call. Get in with your question, comment, suggestion. Well, I don't know about suggestions. I don't know if I want to open myself up to that. I get enough of that through the internet, believe me. The good news is I know that you're listening to this show because I get a lot of emails from you. So I am very happy about that. Oh, email also is hello@richontech.tv. It's interesting being on TV versus radio. TV, I get emails, but radio, much more detailed. Much more detailed emails about what I'm talking about and what I'm doing. So it's just different mediums, I guess. Speaking of TV, you can watch my TV segments on the website. Just go to richontech.tv. You know, I cover a variety of tech topics. The latest thing I did is a hologram kind of box that it's expensive, but it's one of those, I don't know how you explain it. It's just, it looks like you're a hologram. You step in this box, or you step in front of the studio and they beam you into this box and you literally look 3D. It's pretty cool. I've always wanted to become a hologram, and now I have. All right, let's go to Tim in Moorpark, California. Tim, you're on with Rich. Welcome to the show.
What program should I use to put on an old Dell computer that has Windows 10 on it now. It's too old to put Windows 11 on it, and there's a program to put on there. Also, if I use an old phone that I plug in the wall, I can call a radio station. But if I use a portable handheld house phone, there's a time delay, and I can't call the radio station.
Well, I don't know about question number two, but I can help you with question number one. So your computer's too old for Windows 11. It sounds like you're referring to something I've mentioned in the past called Chrome OS Flex. And this pretty much turns an old Windows or Mac computer into a Chromebook. And it's very easy to install. You can put it on a USB drive. You pop the USB drive into your device, and then you can install Chrome OS Flex. So the main things you need to know about this, you got to have 8 gigs of storage on the drive. Got to have a Windows PC or a Mac. The Mac, I believe, runs it from the drive. And then you also have to have some internal storage on there as well. So you can see all of the requirements. If you just Google Chrome OS Flex, that's what the deal is. And the neat thing about it is that it turns an old computer, kind of gives it a couple more years. And you'll be able to do the basics on here. This is not going to be able to run Android apps or any sort of specialized apps, but you will have full access to the web. And let's be honest, for like 99.9% of what you need to do, the web is going to be just fine. And this is going to take an old computer and just kind of make it new again. And again, it works on Macs, PCs. They won't really slow down because this doesn't need much to run. And so it's one of these things where you can breathe an extra couple of years of life into your device. And it is free. So you don't really need to do much more except install it. And I'll put the link on the website, richontech.tv. There are some certified models, and you can check that on the installation guide as well. But it's very, very simple. Once you make that little USB drive, it's pretty simple to get this thing on there. Let's see. I'm looking at the requirements. Minimum device requirements. Intel or AMD x86, 4 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of internal storage, a USB drive. You do need full BIOS access. And, hold on. Components made before 2010 might result in a poor experience. So if your computer is that old, then yes, it may be time for an update. But otherwise, this is going to work pretty well. And it's just one of these things where it's nice to know that you can do this for free. All right, I'll put that link on there. Speaking of Google, and I didn't mean to avoid your second question, Tim, but I'm not really sure. And I think that's highly specialized to calling a radio station. So I think that, I'm not sure on that one. Okay, so if you have a Google account, you probably got this scary email that said an update to album archive. What does that mean? Hey, Rich, you're receiving this email because you viewed album archive recently, or you may have some content that's visible in album archive. Starting on July 19th, 2023, album archive will no longer be available. Now I'm thinking, I don't even know what album archive is, but now I'm scared that I'm losing access to album archive. We recommend using Google Takeout to download a copy of your album archive data before then. What is the album archive? No idea. Here's some content that's only available in album archive, and it will be deleted July 19th. Rare cases like small thumbnail photos and album comments or likes. What is that? Some Google Hangouts data from album archive. Okay, those Google Hangouts was back in the day when we were chatting with Google Hangouts. This is my favorite one. Background images uploaded in the Gmail theme picker prior to 2018. If you're missing a background image that you uploaded to Gmail prior to 2018, I think by this time you can let go of that. Now, if you'd like to access this data, please make a copy using Google Takeout. You can also view the content directly. So, some of the other things that were in this was Blogger. Long story short, I'm not even going to spend that much time on this because it's just kind of nonsense. Just go to get.google.com/album archive. That is get.google.com /album archive. And that will show you all of the stuff that you have in this mysterious album archive. And so I found one picture of Swedish meatballs in sauce that I have no idea where that's from. I don't know if I had this at IKEA back in the day. This was from 2017. I must have posted that picture. That was to Blogger. And then in my hangout photos, I did have a couple of photos in there from various chats that I had over the years. And I went through and I did kind of a cross-reference. So I clicked the photo and I clicked the little info on it. And then I took the photo name and I then popped that into Google Photos to see if I had a copy of that picture. And out of almost every picture that I looked at, just kind of a spot check, I had them all in my Google Photos. Because if you think about it, these were all photos that I sent to someone on a chat. And so I probably sent them from my phone at some point. And so I probably took them on my phone. But anyway, if you're curious about this whole thing, I think you're probably going to be okay. But just go to get.google.com/album archive to see if you have anything in this mysterious. I know everyone's like, Google is shutting down another product. They're so wishy-washy with their products. They don't care about anything. But this is stuff that nobody has used in a long time. Let me just do one more Google story before we go here. You probably heard about this as well. It was all over the news. If you clicked on a Google search link between 2006 and 2013, you might be eligible to receive some money. $23 million. Well, guess how much you're going to get? $7.70. And guess what that requires you to do? You have to fill out your full name, your address, and your email by July 31st. So if you want to do this, that's fine. I'm not judging you for it, but I saw all the headlines everywhere that made you click, right? Google owes you money. Yeah, I searched Google. How much am I going to get out of this $23 million? Less than $8. Is my name, address, and email worth $8? Probably not. I am not giving this information to some random legal firm so that I can potentially get a $7.70 check down the line. Now, I will say today I did get, let's see if I can find it. I got a PayPal notification that I did get. What was this? Avis Budget Group. I got $37 for an e-toll settlement today. So these things do work, but I don't even remember putting my information in for this e-toll settlement from Budget Avis. I didn't even know those were part of the same company. So anyway, if you want to do the Google search thing, I'm not going to hold it against you. But for $7.70, I mean, these class action settlements, they sound great. Google has to pay $23 million because of privacy concerns. But the average person really gets nothing out of this. The lawyers, they're going to make out really, really well. I'm sure they're getting more than $7.70. Again, I'll put it all on the website, richontech.tv. All right, as Kim would say, I'm getting fired up. 888-RICH-101, 888-742-4101. I'm going to try to get our special guests on coming up. But we are going to talk to Jason Horn, food writer, about mozzarella cheese grown in a lab. I'll tell you what I thought of that. Plus, more of your calls and the top tech scams. Text, T-E-X-T. You're listening to Rich on Tech. Do we have the special guest? It looks like we do. Okay. Let's bring up, here we are. One line six. Mom?
Yes. Hi.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you.
So, this is my mom in New Jersey. You actually listen to the show, don't you? How do you listen?
I go to my Google Home and ask it to play KFI.
I love it. Well, that's good. See, if I had a little ding, I'd say, ding, that's right. And so what do you think of the show? Do you think the host is good or what?
You meaning that you're the host?
Yeah.
Yes.
I
may be biased, but yes. No, I think you're amazing at what you do.
Is the information easy to understand? Because a show, you know, I'm trying to make the show understandable by a lot of people, including, I always say, my mom, and that's you. So are you understanding the show?
Most of it. I mean, I think you try to talk in terms that, the average non-high-tech person can understand.
Okay. Well, the reason I call you is a very important one. You were telling me that they changed something, and that is AOL.
Yes.
You love AOL.
I guess you could say that.
Yeah. Go ahead. What do you like about AOL? Many people might not even realize that AOL is still around, but then there's a lot of people that actually still use it.
Yes, that is true. A lot of people don't use AOL anymore. But that was the first email, I don't even know what you call it, thing I used. And I guess I just never really wanted to change it.
And so what happened this week? You called me up frantically and you said, Richard, you call me Richard when you're, you know,
Richard.
And you said what? You said, I don't like this.
Okay. So yeah, initially I didn't like it because they changed the format. And as far as I know, they didn't give a warning. Like all of a sudden it was just changed. And I guess that threw me where, wow. And I didn't initially like it. I am getting used to it.
Oh, that's good. So you're getting used to the new AOL. I wouldn't even think that. I mean, I'm sure there's probably one person working on the AOL program, because I don't even know what's happening with AOL these days. You're still using like the downloaded program on your computer. It's not like you're going to AOL.com.
I have no idea. Just on my desktop. I really don't know. You probably put it there for me.
Okay. So all of the formatting changed, but now you're saying you're getting used to it. So you're it's okay now.
Well, because I guess I've gotten used to it. The one thing that I decided I'm not that crazy about, when you click on an email, you don't see the entire email. There's a little arrow on the right side of the email that you have to click on to expand the email to see the entire email. And that little arrow is so teeny tiny that it's kind of hard to see. Like it's not in a bright color. It's like a light gray. So, you know, you kind of have to really look to find it.
Okay. Well, as long as you know it's there. And do you think there's a connotation when people get your email from AOL.com? Do you think people judge you for that?
Probably. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. They probably wonder, why do you still have AOL?
And why do you? What's your answer?
That's a good question. I guess I'm just very loyal.
All right.
I don't really have a better answer than that. I just always liked it. I guess that's really the reason. I mean, you know, I do have Gmail, but I don't use it very often.
Yeah. Okay.
Except for work, but I do have it.
As of, let's see here. As of 2021, 174 million people still go to AOL. That doesn't mean it's like users. 2.1 million people still use AOL's dial-up service. That was in 2015.
Dial-up? I didn't know they still had that.
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, you remember that. And then 1.5 million use or pay for AOL in 2021. Good news is you don't pay for it. It's free.
No.
Anyway, thanks for calling in, Mom. Or I guess thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. And I have one other thing to say.
Oh, gosh. I'm nervous. What? We don't let people do this on the radio. Surprise me.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to surprise you. Happy Father's Day.
Oh, thank you. All right.
You're welcome.
There we go. We had the dings. I love it. All right, Mom. Love you. See you later.
All right. Love you, too. All
Bye-bye.
Right. Bye.
All right. There you have it. Mom on the show for the first time and the ding from nowhere. I love it. Ah, this show is really, we're really, really making strides here after our Google Meet fiasco earlier today. There we go. Okay. Google Lens. Man, is everything about Google today? What is happening here? Everything's about Google. One quick thing to know about Google Lens. You can now search for skin conditions. So Google Lens app, they have added skin conditions. So Google says describing an odd mole or rash on your skin can be hard with words alone. So now you can snap a picture of that situation on your skin, upload it through Google Lens, and you'll find visual matches to inform your search. You can also use it for bumps on your lip, a line on your nails, or hair loss on your head. The feature is currently available in the U.S. If you're wondering how to access Google Lens, it looks like the little camera icon on the Google search bar. So you can use it for skin conditions, but Google says it is not a diagnosis. All right, coming up here, we are going to talk fake cheese, lab-grown mozzarella with food writer Jason Horn. And if you have a question, give me a call, 888-RICH-101. That's 888-742-4101. My name is Rich DeMiro. I'm having way too much fun hanging out here with you, talking technology. We got lots more to come. Stay tuned. All right, so we've got a fun little conversation here. We're going to talk lab-grown cheese. And why would anyone want to eat that? Well, I don't know. We're going to discuss. Jason Horn is joining me, food writer. His social is Messy Epicure. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So you and I were at an event together where we met, Pizzeria Mozza. And this was an event for a cheese called New Culture. And right. You want to take it from there? What is New Culture?
Sure, yeah. So basically they're kind of going a step further than the fake cheese that's on the market now, and they're making real, quote-unquote, fake cheese. So yeah, the idea is they have found a way to produce casein, which is the protein that is in cow milk, that is in cheese, without cows, using some kind of bacterial fermentation, and they make that into mozzarella.
Now, they've never mentioned that this is lab-grown cheese. They don't use that terminology, but I do.
Right.
And is this is this lab-grown, or am I just being overly dramatic?
I mean, I suppose at some point the lab gets big enough that it's a factory. But yeah, they're sort of taking the individual components of cheese and mixing them up into a cheese that is not, didn't come from cows, didn't come from milk.
And so we tried this cheese at Pizzeria Mozza, which is a pretty famous pizza place in Hollywood, California. It's been around forever. The chef is very famous, Nancy Silverton. So it's not like this is just some fly-by-night place that's trying this. This is like a real pizza place.
No, this is a big deal. Like, Nancy Silverton is a big-name chef. She's big in the pizza world. And she's kind of, as I understand it, kind of their first like chef partner. She's on board with them. They're sort of jumping into this whole thing together.
Now, before we get into like how this tasted and kind of the night, this stuff is expensive. So the one thing they didn't really talk about was how expensive this cheese is to make. And when I pressed them on this, they said they want to be competitive, but they don't really have anything to say about it until next year. So is this cheese really expensive? Because Nancy joked when she was shredding it that don't drop a piece of it because it's like gold.
Yeah, I mean, I did hear someone said that, you know, the small group of us in the room were eating like thousands of dollars worth of cheese. So, I mean, this is not something that's going to be on the market. They said it'll be in the restaurant in 2024. So, like, this is very early stage. I mean, I think it's probably incredibly expensive to make right now, but the goal is to make more of it cheaper and to become competitive with standard cheese eventually.
And, of course, the question is, why do this? And there's many reasons. Yeah. The reason for New Culture, they say it's all about sustainability. This cheese is different than plant-based cheeses. It's not made with nuts. It melts. It stretches. It's vegan. It's lactose and cholesterol-free. What do you make of this whole world of, like, these companies that are coming up with stuff? Because I report on this stuff a lot, and people always give me a hard time. Like, Rich, just eat the real stuff. But is there a reason why these companies are making this stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of people, you know, don't want to eat dairy, don't want to eat meat. They're trying to, for all sorts of different reasons. Sometimes it might be for dietary reasons. Sometimes it might be for sustainability reasons. You know, sometimes it might be for, you know, cruelty to animal reasons. Like, you just don't want to eat animal products. so there are a lot of reasons someone might want a plant-based mozzarella substitute. But the problem is, you know, if you're not eating cheese, you're not eating cheese. So, like, you know, you've sort of, like, you've given up mozzarella. Like, you don't need an exact substitute of mozzarella. It kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, I mean, that's always kind of the question I have. It's like, if you're not eating this stuff, it's like, are you really seeking out just a different version of it?
Exactly, yeah. I don't know that, like, there are people who eat cheese right now who would switch to non-dairy if only there was a perfect mozzarella substitute. In a lot of ways, this and some of the lab-grown meat, which I think we're going to get into a little bit, they're sort of solving a problem that doesn't really exist.
Okay, so let's, before we get into lab-grown meat, which I was actually on LinkedIn earlier, and I saw that Just That Does the Eggs, they're doing meat apparently.
So, oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, so so let's talk about the taste of this cheese. So what were your thoughts? We tried it on pizza, we tried it on some rice balls, and in an eggplant sort of parm dish. What was your thought of this cheese?
So, I mean, I feel like we only got to try kind of the cheese really on its own on the pizza. The first two was sort of mixing with other stuff, so you couldn't really get a good impression of what it tasted like. But on the pizza, I mean, the stretch was really good. I definitely have not seen a plant-based cheese that like melts and stretches quite like that. So the texture was really good. The flavor was right. I mean, we got to taste also like a few shreds of kind of the raw cheese, and it tasted like mozzarella cheese. There was something, I don't know if it was just like in my head because I knew it was, you know, what it was. There was something slightly off about the texture. I can't really describe exactly what it was. It was like, it was almost too stretchy.
It was almost like, the actual texture, it was a little bit not as like bitey. I don't know if that's a word, but like it was a little mushier, almost like a Velveeta. Like if you sliced like a Velveeta, okay. it was like thinner.
Right. It was softer.
Yeah. Softer. Yeah. And like almost like silkier. The other thing that I thought was that it wasn't as salty as regular cheese, which is easily fixable.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, part of it, I think, might have been just because they were trying to show off this cheese. They really, like, went back on the seasonings on the rest of this stuff. But, yeah, I mean, that you're right about that, but that's such an easy problem to fix. It didn't even stick in my mind.
So you've been covering food for a long time. I mean, obviously there's a need for this stuff. And I like the fact that this is cholesterol-free, lactose-free, you know, vegan. I mean, there are people that are seeking this type of thing out. But why do we see such an emphasis? I mean, the fake meats, the fake cheeses, I mean, basically fake everything. And is it fake or is it real?
It's the thing that New Culture said was they're calling themselves the first real vegan cheese because it has the real protein that's in cheese. I mean, it's silly to use the terms fake and real with this. I like, you know, vegan cheese, for example, or plant-based cheese a little less because plant-based is also kind of, you know, iffy. But like, you know, vegan cheese makes sense because there's no animal products in it. That's kind of the point of it. I mean, I think that like there are reasons to look for this stuff. There are, you know, environmental reasons. Cows are pretty bad for the environment. I just, at this point, this cheese is probably just as bad for the environment. Like when we had that dinner, that was, you know, months of work. It had been presumably flown in from Northern California. They held all the executives along with it. So like they've got a long way to go before they're making it, you know, at a high enough volume that it's going to make any difference.
Ooh, and one thing that I kind of led my review with for KTLA is that I had to sign a waiver to eat this cheese.
Yes, indeed. That was the first time I've ever had to sign a waiver to taste a food, for sure.
Right? That was a little concerning. And I said to the CEO, Matt Gibson, who was standing there, CEO of New Culture, and I said, Matt, is this stuff safe? I mean, what am I eating here that I have to sign a waiver? I've never had to sign a waiver to eat something.
That is true. I feel like it was mostly to protect the restaurant because, you know, the restaurant wasn't exactly serving the cheese. It's a weird situation because it is kind of this, like, it's an experimental food that, you know, we, in theory, something in there could have made us sick, but like all the parts of it are things that are in other foods. Like it's mixing existing foods together in a new way.
I left there in a cold sweat. I woke up in the middle of the night thinking, oh my gosh, there's going to be something in that cheese that is like a spore or some sort of like thing that will never come out of my body, and I'm going to die from eating this cheese. I didn't, thankfully.
Have you survived so far?
I've survived, but But that's what I woke up thinking in the middle of the night.
Right, yeah. I don't think they're using, you know, some kind of alien microbe that fell from space in their cheese, but they were pretty cagey about the fermentation process and what exactly makes the casein.
They were, exactly. All right, we're going to leave it there. Food writer Jason Horn, you are at Messy Epicure on social media. What kind of stuff do you cover in your day-to-day?
Kind of everything food and drink and cooking. So, you know, everything from I was writing about the best Indian cookbooks this week and the best cheap vodkas last week. So really everything food and drink related. I've covered it all. I love it all. So
do you remember what the top, you remember what the top recommendation was for the cheap vodka? Just asking for a friend.
Oh my God. It was, I think it was Taka.
Taka. Okay. Well, you heard it here first.
With two A's, T-A-A-K-A.
Okay. Sounds like something I might have had in college.
Exactly.
Jason Horn, thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Rich.
All right. Take care.
Have a good one.
All right. If you want more information about anything I mentioned here, again, go to the website, richontech.tv. Coming up, more of your calls. Looks like the lines are filled, so that's exciting. And I'm going to talk about this. Where is it here? I've got the top text scams. These are interesting. So you always get these text scams, you know, these little text messages that are trying to scam you. I always wondered, what's the end game? I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the top text message scams. I'm going to explain what they're trying to get out of you when they text you. That package is lost or whatever they say. You're listening to Rich on Tech. Marshall is in Reseda, California. Marshall, you're on with Rich.
Hi, fellow New Jerseyan.
Oh, what's up, New Jersey?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I haven't seen you in Amazon Fresh on Topanga recently. I ran into you. I'm the first that I met when the first store first opened.
Oh, was that you? There. Yeah, I remember. Yes. Oh, that was so long ago.
Anyways, that phone that I had, that Note 20 Ultra that I had, I was at Dodger Stadium, and I think I put it on top of my buddy's car and drove off without getting it.
Ooh.
And I lost it, and I'm not too bright because I didn't back anything up, including my contacts, my notes, and a lot of other stuff that I want to almost kill myself for doing, okay? And I was hoping that somehow, you know, somehow miracle is able to be done somehow, that if somebody, in fact, somehow retrieved the phone and got it somehow, that, you know, the IME numbers or whatever, all those numbers that are inside the phone like that, they're basically like a thumbprint or something like that, that if they ever tried to reactivate it again, that somehow it would be able to be found and retrieved because it would be working on the same number somehow. Is there some hope that there's some way of trying to find it at all?
Yeah. So, number one, have you checked out Google Find My?
I think somebody tried to do it in the store. I don't know if they did it and they couldn't find it at the time. I don't know.
Okay.
I think they did that and they couldn't find it, if I recall correctly. So, forgive me, but I'm not tech savvy, so I don't know how to do a lot of stuff at all.
No, that's fine. So I think the first thing to do is, do you have access to a computer outside of the phone?
No, I don't. Well, in the library.
Okay. So go to the library. Do you know your Google login information?
Yes.
Okay. So go to google.com/Android/find. Okay. That's the first thing you need to do. And
okay.
So when you go there, you're going to have to log into your Google account and you will see a list of your devices. If it's only this one device, you should see it on there. You click that device. It will tell you.
I had a bunch more. Yeah. I lost a few of them, but that's all.
You've lost more than one device, Marshall?
So over the past 15 years, I've lost 4 devices.
Oh my. Okay. We got to come up with a new solution for you not to lose these things. Have you ever heard of a leash? You know those chains that people use for their wallets? You can get one of those for your phone.
I've resorted to putting a lanyard on my phone, okay, to have a big lantern hanging off of it, so I try to wrap it around my wrist. I still left it behind a couple times, but I'm getting much better at it now.
Okay. So notwithstanding, you're going to find when you log into here, you're going to find a lot of devices that you've left in places over the years. But once you go to this website, Google Find My Device, you can tap the device, and there's a couple of things you can do. You can play a sound. That's not really going to help unless the device is nearby. You can secure the device, and that will actually lock the device and sign out of your Google account. That's given this device has internet still. It may not. And then you can erase the device. So it'll also show you where that device is on a map. So you can see if, you know, the last known location of that device. Now, if this flew off of someone's car in a parking lot, chances are you're probably not going to retrieve it. But I will tell you, my father left his phone on top of his car, and it did fly off, and I showed him how to do this, and he did see where it was located on the side of the freeway, and he was adventurous enough to go back, and he did retrieve his phone. And he found it, and it was great. The phone was ruined, but the best part was the case was just fine. And when he got his new phone, he put the old case that had been run over 100 times on the freeway on his new phone. So that goes to show you the dedication he had to that case, which, by the way, I recommended to him, and that's what saved the whole situation. Anyway, that's what you need to do. Look for this device on your Google Find My. See if it's on there. Now, when it comes to your information on this device, there's a couple places to look. Google is really good about backing up devices, even if you don't think they're backed up. And so the first place I want you to look for your contacts is contacts.google.com. And you may find that all of your contacts are miraculously in there. I'm going to bet they are. And then the other place I want you to look is one.google.com. This is spelled out the word one, O-N-E, .google.com. And inside there, you can tap storage, and then you can go into, it says your device backups. And I can see I've got my Google Pixel, my Galaxy S23 Ultra, and it will tell me backed up 19 hours ago. And then you can see details, and lo and behold, I can see photos and videos, SMS messages, call history, device settings, and then 81 apps. Now, the notes is going to depend on the app you use for notes. If you use Google Keep, you can go to keep.google.com and check for your notes in there. They may be in there. If this was a Samsung, you may be using Samsung's proprietary notes program, which is sometimes linked to OneNote on Microsoft if you decided to do that. Other times it's not. But not all hope is lost here, Marshall. I think that those are the places to look for your phone and see if you can locate it and then locate the information. Then you got to think about getting a new phone. I would recommend the Pixel 7a as a new phone. If you want to stay with the Android, I know you had the Note. I think that the Android 7a will be nice because it's a good price. And maybe this time think about insurance on your phone because... Oh my gosh, I can't believe you lost so many phones. Speaking of phones, I'm going to give you one more website. And remember, I put all this stuff on the show notes. This is show number 24. So if you go to richontech.tv, you can see that. But this is listener Jim sent me this website. It's broadbandmap.fcc.gov. And this is a cool website that will show you the high-speed internet providers at your home. So this is the government makes this map so that they can figure out where to put federal funding for better internet in different places. They've got like $42 billion to spend. But for you as a regular person, it's just a cool way to see what internet service providers are servicing your home. So if you want to switch or you want to see if you can get a better deal or you're just curious, broadbandmap.fcc.gov, you can pop that in to the website. Then you put in your address and it will show you all the different providers that service your home. Can you believe it? That's going to do hour number two for the show. 888-RICH-101-888-742-4101. More Rich on Tech right after this. I want to get to the top tech scams. Text of 2022. But first, let's go to Alice in Yucca Valley. Alice, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Excuse me. So I am really annoyed with Windows 10. I have a Windows 10 machine, which I hate to use. I'm still using my old Windows Pro 7 Pro because I can organize my files the way I want to organize them in a folder. And I can organize my folders where I want to organize them. And I'm a super organized person. And so I like to be able to put stuff the way I want to. So I don't want to do it alphabetically. And it really doesn't allow me. Windows 10 does not allow me to sort it any way I want.
Oh.
There used to be workarounds. Even with Windows 7, didn't want you to do it. But you could do a workaround. And so what can I do in Windows 10? So I can sort the files the way I can manually put something on top if I want it to be on top.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You want to just move a file to the top and not put it in any specific like alphabetical or
Correct.
Anything like that.
Right.
Oh, I don't know if there's a way to manually do that.
No, don't tell me that.
There may be a helper app, but I mean, you've gone through and right clicked and saw the different ways you can organize things, and none of those kind of ways you want to use.
No, I mean, there's probably 40 of them, there's some really obscure ones. I don't know if they are.
Yeah, but you want to do like, you want this file up at the top, you want this file up at the bottom. So I'll tell you right. what I do, and this is okay. kind of a little hack, but, I do the same thing, but because sometimes I want some things to stay at the top, I want some things to stay at the bottom. So what I do, and I know this is I'm sure someone listening is going to have a much better solution than this, but what I do is I just put like a one dash at the top file that I want. And then for the bottom files, I put ZZs. And so those will always stick to the bottom. And then I do alphabetical, but that is a total, like, I can't really recommend that that's the best way to do it, but that's what I do. And it's funny you say this because I was just in my Dropbox the other day and I was sorting by different ways, you know, date modified and, you know, size and kind and all these different things you can sort by. But at the end of the day, I literally just put a ZZ against the files, you know, the file name or the file folder that I want to stick to the bottom, and a one dash at the top or an A, whatever works. But that's the only thing. There may be a third party app, like a helper app for Windows. I don't know of that right now. Maybe someone that's listening can email and explain that, and then we can include it in the feedback segment later in the show. hello@richontech.tv. But I know that's not the answer, but you want to keep these in a specific way. That's what it sounds like, huh?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if I do a one, then what if I come along with something else that I want to be one? Then I have to renumber the other one as two. And so,
yeah, you know. It's not a perfect system, but you know, it does work for me. I mean, believe me, I that is what I use, and that's the only way that I know of doing it. There may be, like I said, you know, you do get these built-in options to sort by, but you're not the custom sorting is something that I just don't see on that I've seen on either machine, Mac or Windows. But I have a feeling there could be a helper app that may do it, but I have not come across that app. But what are you trying to organize? Just, do you like things to be in a certain way?
I'm a scientist. I have lots of different folders for different projects, and I want, you know, I'd like to have like the current thing that we're working on, like at the top, or, and maybe something else comes in that, okay, that really kind of needs to be up at the top too. And, you know, I don't care about, I mean, other stuff can just be at the bottom because I haven't really, I mean, there's some stuff I can just say it can be alphabetical or date modified or whatever, but, and I don't really care because I never look at it, but it's all the projects I work on. It's like, I want to be able to organize it the way I want. It's just like you would organize your files in your office, you know, the way you want them organized. So you can be efficient.
Yeah. I mean, if you want something in the front, something in the back. The only other thing I would say that you could do to maybe is, you know, the hack that I mentioned, the only other thing I would say is you can pin a file for quick access. So that's on the left-hand side. It'll have like your different files. Like and I do that as well. So I have a couple of file folders that I just keep I'm using a Mac, but it's on the left-hand side. It's my favorites. I just keep those in there. It's not a perfect system. Believe me, I think that there are definitely some divisions between what we do in real life and what we can do on the computer with the organization of files. And believe me, you're way ahead of 99% of people who have just given up on any sort of organization whatsoever. So the fact that you want to organize these things, Alice, is great. But I don't have the answer for you on how to do that the best way. The only other thing I can think of is maybe if you don't have your if you have your view instead of a list, maybe you can just have your stuff where it's just kind of in a folder, but it's still going to kind of default to some sort of grid, I believe. But we'll look for a helper app and we'll see if someone can email that and get that to us, because that would be really helpful. All right, let me tell you about some of these scams. I've been promising you the top text scams. So number one, this is from the FTC, by the way. $330 million lost to text scams in 2022. These are text messages coming to phones. Median loss, $1,000. And these things are doubling and tripling year over year. So more people are getting scammed by text messages. So that's why more scam artists are using them. Number one, copycat bank fraud prevention alerts. These are really tricky. So you might get a fake number to call about suspicious activity on your account, or they might say, hey, reply yes or no to verify this transaction that, of course, you either did or didn't make, or you don't really understand if you made it. Once you reply, you'll get a call from the fake fraud department, and people thought it was their bank helping them out. Instead, money was transferred out of their account. This scam's median loss was $3,000 last year. That's a lot. Number two, bogus little gifts. That can cost you. You might get a text about a free gift, a reward, or a prize that looks like it comes from a company you work with, Walmart, or who knows. Next thing you know, you click the link and you pay a small shipping fee, and you just gave your credit card number to a scam artist. Now you have fraudulent charges. Number three, fake package delivery problems. This is when this is one you get all the time. I posted about this one on my Twitter the other day. It was a text pretending to be from the USPS. It said, hey, confirm this. It could be from FedEx, could be from UPS, says there's a problem with delivery. They link to a website that looks real. I don't think it looks real, but it's not real. You know that. And then you have to pay a small re-delivery fee, which, come on, there's no such thing. Many people report that that is a trick to get your credit card number. These scam artists also try to get your personal information, including social security number. Why would USPS, FedEx, or UPS need my social security number? They do not. Where's our buzzer? Phony job offers. Promises of easy money for mystery shopping at stores like Whole Foods and Walmart. This is a favorite scam. Job scammers also target people who post their resumes to employment websites like Indeed. In most of these reports, scammers use checks that seem to clear, but turn out to be fake or trick people into sending them money. All of these things are basically to trick you and to get you to somehow give over your personal information or get money into their hands. And finally, the not really from Amazon security alerts. These look like a fake bank text, but this is from Amazon. It's an automated fraud prevention method message. It's saying you need to verify this big ticket order that you made, but of course you didn't make it. So you call the number in the text. You get an Amazon rep who's phony. They're going to fix your account. You trust them. And next thing you know, you give the rep remote access to your phone so they can fix things or get your refund for you. The rep says a couple of zeros were accidentally added to the refund, so they need you to return that money to them, often by buying gift cards or giving them the gift card's PIN numbers. Do not send gift cards over the phone. You go to any store nowadays, Target, Walmart, big sign by the gift cards. Do not give these gift cards to people for cash. Like, I had someone that emailed me and said, hey, I've got a friend that's really sick and I can't make it to buy him an Apple gift card. Can't get to the store. Can you buy me one and send me a picture of the back? I said, really? You could just go online and buy this thing, buddy. And we went back and forth before they realized that I was not going to play their game. So what can you do? Report these scam texts. You can forward it to 7726, which spells out spam. I don't know if that really does anything, but they say it helps your wireless provider spot and block similar messages. You can also report it using Apple on iMessages or Google Messages, or you can report it to the FTC at reportfraud.ftc.gov. And again, do not click on links in unexpected texts. They will try to get your money or your personal information. And you can also filter unwanted texts. The problem with that is that it does catch some text that you may want. So I don't turn that feature on. I think it's better to just be aware of this stuff, and that way you don't get caught. All right, coming up on the show, we've got Justin Easter. He is the founder and host of Diabetech. He's going to join us to talk diabetes tech, plus more of your calls at 888-RICH-101. That's 888-742-4101. You're hanging out with me, Rich DeMuro. You are listening to Rich on Tech. Let's go to Eric in Guanajuato, Mexico. Eric, you're on with Rich.
Hey, Rich. Thanks for taking my call. My issue is with my Yahoo Mail This started years ago, and the issue is I cannot take my file, like I cannot take emails that are junk from my inbox and dump them into my junk file. For some reason, that option is no longer available. I did talk to Yahoo about this, and they didn't really give me a solution or anything that I could kind of figure out. I can take those junk emails and dump them manually into, say, iCloud or Gmail. But it's just a pain in the rear end. And the option that I get, Rich, is, you know, and I'm on my phone, obviously, and it's the same thing with my iPad, is when I slide the email over to dump it into my junk file, that option is like dimmed out. There's even like a little X on it, like it just doesn't. You know, it's like it's not there. I hope I'm making sense.
So these are all, you're basically trying to get a spam email gone from your inbox.
Correct. That is correct. And I'm trying to train the system, which should be trainable to
mark it as spam and to say don't let these through again.
That's right.
But when you try to do that, you're not getting that option.
No, and to the extent that I'm putting it into Gmail or iCloud, well, yeah, those systems recognize it, but not my Yahoo. And my Yahoo is my go-to pretty much for everything.
Are you running any sort of ad blocker on your phone or on your desktop?
You know, I don't think I am. Not an ad blocker. No.
That could be interfering with it. So an ad blocker could be interfering. Have you tried deleting the Yahoo app and reinstalling it? This is only happening on your phone. Does the same thing happen on the desktop?
You know, I looked at the desktop this morning before I called you, and I think I'm able to easily dump the files into junk. However, yeah, but they're still coming through. Junk.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, look, it's tough to stop all the spams, especially on a Yahoo or an AOL.
Well,
you know,
that too, Rich, is that my iPad, my cell phone, and my desktop are all synced.
Right.
And I'm using my iPad and my cell phone almost 99% of the time.
Okay. And are you using, one more question, are you using the native app or are you using an app that's built into the iPad or the iPhone?
Did you download
the Yahoo app or are you using like the Mail app?
It's Yahoo Mail, I'm pretty sure, Rich.
Okay. All right. So what I would do is I would just try uninstalling the app. If it's working on the desktop, it sounds like the feature is there. It's just not properly working on your phone. So if this is something that was not working across all of your different devices, I would say it's a Yahoo issue. But it sounds like it's something on your device. It's a device-specific thing. So I would uninstall the Yahoo app, reinstall it, and also make sure that you're using the Yahoo app. If you're using a third-party mail app, it may not have the same functionality that the Yahoo app does on the desktop. So look in the App Store for the Yahoo email app, install that, see if it still doesn't let you send a spam. I think that should cover it, though. 888-RICH-101, you're listening to Rich on Tech. Joining me now is Justin Easter, a YouTuber that specializes in diabetes technology and gadgets, formerly of CNET. Justin, thanks so much for joining me today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
So first, let's start with your journey here to doing your own thing. You were at CNET. I know they had a lot of turnover there and things changed. So you made the decision to go off on your own. How did you feel on that sort of thought process? Like, what made you want to do that?
Yeah, well, it felt kind of natural because prior to CNET, I was actually a tech YouTuber reviewing all types of tech products, from smart home products, VR, AR, and just emerging tech. And then CNET was kind of like this dream job I had, something on my list that I always wanted to check off. And I'm so grateful that I got to like work there, and I worked with some incredible people, but it kind of felt like just the industry, the media industry and CNET were kind of going in a direction that I didn't want to go in. And I also happened to be diagnosed with diabetes a couple years ago, and I was just putting up videos online with that, and they were helping people. And I kind of, you know, found that my specialty in tech and this new life experience could be something I could do full time. So it kind of just felt like this natural step to kind of take my career, and it's been incredible.
And you do the YouTube videos. Can you tell me how to say this again? Because I heard you say it's Diabet Tech, right?
Yes, I'm so glad you said it. Like, I'm so glad you said it correctly.
It's tricky because it looks, you know, it looks like there's a lot of different ways you can say it, but it's really, look, I mean, the internet is all about sort of these niche categories, and diabetes, when you were diagnosed, I mean, that was only a couple years ago, you said?
Yeah, and the crazy part about it, Rich, was that I was diagnosed on TikTok. I was posting videos on TikTok of what my doctor at the time had me doing and symptoms I was experiencing. I was misdiagnosed with type 2 diabetes at the time, which happens a lot for people that are older in age. I was 30 years old at the time, and very unheard of or very rare for people to be diagnosed with type 1 that late. Anyway, my doctor said I had type 2. I was going with the flow. I lost 20 pounds. I was so sick. I was posting these videos on TikTok, and the diabetes community found my videos, and they were like, you need to get an endocrinologist. You have type 1. You need to get an insulin pump. You need to get a continuous glucose monitor. And I owe my life and my health to this community. You know, they basically prevented me from going into diabetic ketoacidosis and like going to the hospital. Like, it was incredible.
Wow. That is,
and that kind of inspired me.
Yeah. To kind of help other people.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about some of the tech that you use for your diabetes. I imagine that when you were diagnosed, you, and as a tech person, you probably wanted to turn to the best, and you probably did a lot of research in the products that you would personally use.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today also with like the incredible help that I received from my support system, my endocrinologist and my diabetes educator. But yeah, like naturally, like I wanted to have the best tech available. And I feel like a spoiled person with diabetes. Like, I came in at a time when there's so much incredible technology available. So on a daily basis, I'm wearing both an insulin pump and a continuous glucose monitor. My insulin pump, the one I wear is a tubeless one. So it's kind of like a patch that I put on that, you know, other people may have seen ones that look like beepers and have a tube connected to people. So this one's kind of its own thing that I put on, tubeless. And that gives me insulin throughout the day. And then it also, I have to program using my phone when I'm eating. So anytime I'm going to eat throughout the day, I let it know, because I also need to get insulin for those meals. The other device I wear is a continuous glucose monitor. So what that does is it measures my blood sugar levels every 5 minutes so that I don't have to use one of those finger pricking devices. You know, sometimes I'll have to use that, but very rare. Now I just have this device on. Now, the best part about these two devices, and this is something relatively new over the last few years introduced, I'm using what's called a closed loop insulin delivery system. Both of these devices talk to each other. And so the continuous glucose monitor tells my insulin pump, hey, this is his blood sugar now. And then this is where it was 5 minutes ago. And then this is where we think it's going to go. And so based off of my trajectory and my current blood sugar number, the insulin pump is able to make these decisions every 5 minutes
so that I can, so it can prevent me from getting highs and lows and kind of curb those.
Wow. It sounds like it's much more automated than past systems. I'm curious, where do we stand? I often get the question about watches and things. Where do we stand on sort of the watch that can tell what your levels are through the skin without any sort of invasive nature?
Yeah, so there have been a lot of rumors about that technology over the years. Specifically, I think more recently, Mark Gurman, like a huge person that reports on, you know him, reports on Apple technology. I'm sure you talk about him on the show. He reported that Apple's working on a device that's non-invasive, that can read blood sugar levels using like lasers that go through your skin. From what I hear, especially because I reported on that day that news came out maybe a couple months ago. And I actually had some people from the diabetes community respond saying like, we've been hearing about this for years. It's so far off. We haven't seen any prototypes. Like, people are very skeptical about the technology. I honestly, like, with the device I'm wearing, this continuous glucose monitor is so small that, like, I don't even really feel the need for this technology, especially since it's tied to, like, a watch I have to always wear. And I don't know, sometimes I don't want to wear a watch. I don't mind having this patch on. But, we don't know when this is coming. Apple technically, they're saying Apple's working on one, but who knows when we'll see that. And even if they do, who knows if that will be like a legitimate like medical device, or if they'll, you know, a lot of Apple's features with their like ECG and other features, like they're like, don't quote, like, we're not doctors. This is not a medical device. So it's unclear if it would even be able to be used with like a system like what I use.
What's your advice for someone who was recently diagnosed?
There's community out there and you're not alone. I think that's one of the biggest impacts I've seen and my content has on other people is that, and even like when I was diagnosed, I felt really alone, scared. There was all this information I needed to soak in. Like, it takes a year to get diabetes down. And it's like totally normal to feel overwhelmed, but there are people on hand and ready, myself included, who are out there with like incredible knowledge to share. And also like a great community that like are commenting on these posts and will answer your questions. My DMs are open. I know a lot of other diabetes influencers, their DMs are open. Like don't hesitate to reach out to these people because, we get it. This is the club no one wanted to join. And I think like we're happy to offer this information because we know how it felt kind of to not have it at first.
So tell me how to find you online. Tell folks how to find you online and what you cover and what's, you know, the sort of the best ways to follow you.
Yeah. So for like short clips and short information stuff, I'm on Instagram and TikTok at @DIABE_tech, diabetech. I'm also on YouTube for much longer form content, also diabetech, no underscore for that. And then I also have a podcast where I interview CEOs from different pump companies, different executives, and I also talk to diabetes educators about management and tips for people. That's called the Diabetech Podcast. You can find it on all major podcast platforms, as well as in video form on YouTube.
Awesome. Justin Eatser, thanks so much for joining me today. And thanks for, you got in touch with me a long time ago, way before CNET. And then when you saw me at CES, you said, Rich, I didn't know that you worked at CNET. And sure enough, yes, I worked at CNET as well. So we grow we're part of a growing list of alumni at CNET. So it's kind of fun.
I love it. This is such a full circle moment. I'm so happy to have come on here. This was amazing. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show and sharing your journey, and also follow Justin on social media. I'll put all of his links on my website at richontech.tv. I can't believe it. The show is coming to a close. Coming up, we are going to do your favorite segment, the feedback segment. And apparently my conversation with Mom about AOL hit a nerve. Some of you are angry at me. You're listening to Rich on Tech. I thought this was kind of cool. BetaNews.com found a hidden Windows restart feature. It's called the emergency restart. It's on Windows 10 and 11. And I had to try this for myself because I never knew about this and I thought it was really cool. So, you know that you can press Control Alt Delete, right? To get to the task manager and all the different shutdown options. Well, if you look in the lower right hand corner of your screen, there is a power button. And that, if you press it, will give you sleep, shutdown, or restart. But if you do that same thing, you know, Control Alt Delete to bring up that screen, but then you press and hold down Control and click the power button, now you will access a hidden emergency restart screen, which will immediately restart your system. And it says this should only be used as a last resort when, you know, your computer freezes up. You will lose any unsaved data when you use the emergency restart, but this is just a nice thing to keep in your back pocket. Let's say, you know, a lot of people have these things on their computer where some sort of malware or some sort of website will take over their screen. They can't do anything. So Control Alt Delete and then Control click that power button. And now you can get that emergency restart. It'll restart your computer immediately. I'm going to put a video about this on my Instagram at Rich on Tech. I thought that was a cool little feature. Mercedes-Benz is introducing ChatGPT into its cars. So if you have a Mercedes, and if you do, congrats, you can enable ChatGPT. So the way that they're posting this is it's a beta program. They're trying it out for the next 3 months. You can pretty much ask ChatGPT questions like you would on the computer. So you can ask complex questions, make requests related to your destination, and this will work in over 900,000 Mercedes with the M-Bucks, sounds like Starbucks, the M-Bucks infotainment system. So you can try this out, give them feedback. If you want to try this, all you have to do is say, hey, Mercedes, I want to join the beta program. And I guess that will take you to the system to get this feature in your car. Now, if I just said that in your Mercedes, you now have it. So there you go. The rollout is going to happen over time, but that's kind of cool. I mean, I ChatGPT, you know, it's not up to date per se. It's only up till September 2021, I think, or sometime in 2021. So it's not like totally new, but it's got a lot of good data in there. So kind of fun to have that in your Mercedes. All right, what else? We got a story from Kenneth. He wrote in. He wrote to hello@richontech.tv. Maybe sometimes it's not so bad to be a Luddite and other stuff. Kenneth says, I was in Target the other day. The person in front of me was trying to pay with a Target or some other app on her phone. It took her about 5 minutes to finally figure out how to pay it. If she just paid with her credit card, it would have taken about 10 seconds. Well, Kenneth, this good thing you said her phone, because this could have been me at Target. I'm always inside the Target app, and I'll tell you why. Because two things, you need to scan your Target loyalty card through the app. And then they also have these things called Target offers. And you can add these Target offers to your card and like save a whole bunch of money. We were actually in CVS the other day and my total was like $60. And I said, ooh, let me see if there's any like CVS offers. Same thing. If you download the app, you can load these offers to your card. And so I did that while we were in line. And my wife, of course, kind of rolled her eyes at me. Sure enough, there was a coupon hidden in there for 30% off my entire order. So my order, we watched as it went from about $65 to $42. And my wife was like, wow, good thing you took a couple of minutes to do that. Much to the chagrin of everyone behind me in line that was waiting for me to fiddle with my phone. So Kenneth, it happens. Let's see. Donna writes in, hey, Rich, I recently, oh, funny tech story from a baby boomer. How many more minutes do we have in the show? Because this one's a long one. Hey, Rich, I recently started listening to your podcast and I really like it. I would like to share a tech story with you since tech is your thing. Yep, Rich on Tech. That makes sense. I'm 71 years old. I own a Tesla Model 3. I use the iPhone and have an Apple Watch, which I mostly use for keeping track of my steps. One day while shopping at Walmart, I placed my handbag with my cell phone in the trunk with the groceries and mistakenly closed the trunk with the cell phone inside. As I realized my error, I saw the side view mirrors of the Tesla closing, which we all know if you have a Tesla, that means the car is locking. I kept trying to unlock, it would not. No cell phone, so I couldn't call AAA. I went inside the store, I explained my predicament, asked if I could use their phone. I called my son. I didn't know anyone's phone number by heart except his. It went straight to voicemail. I stressed out, then realized I had my Apple Watch. I saw I can go through my recent texts and attempted to send my kids a text. It didn't work. Finally, I found my phone number to my grandson, who lives about 20 miles away. I called him. He answered, which rarely happens. He has the Tesla app for my car on his phone. He used his app to unlock my Tesla. He did so, and I happily saw the side view mirrors open up and in caps, "Tech saved the day for me." I'm looking forward to starting to listen to your podcast because as a baby boomer, I want to keep up with the podcasts and they're, you make it fun, interesting, and easy. Oh, thank you, Donna. And yes, so my old car used to have a feature when I locked my keys in the trunk, which I did all the time. It would beep three times. It'd go boop, 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 and then it would pop open the trunk. And it saved me so many times from locking my keys in the trunk. Now, with the Tesla, I agree. I usually don't put my phone in the trunk, but there have been so many times and I'm like, oh my gosh, if I locked my keys in the car right now or my phone, I would never be able to open it. But I do carry one of these spare Tesla keys in my pocket because of that reason. AOL. Steve says, AOL was bought. Whoever owned Verizon bought it. My email address kept the Verizon extension. Just last this week, AOL updated the page layouts. For one thing, they switched the login to the right side to the page. I think that's what my mom was talking about. And Chris says, Rich, shame on you for AOL shaming your mom. I didn't AOL shame her. Stop shaming your mom. And it's a big, long email about how I shamed my mom for using AOL. I did not shame her. I just said, why do you still use AOL? I didn't judge her for using AOL. I get plenty of emails from folks that use AOL on a daily basis. Do I think there's better things out there? Absolutely. Can she continue to use AOL? Yes. And I help her with that every day. That's going to do it for this episode of the show. Thanks for listening. Number 24. You can find me on social media at Rich on Tech. My name is Rich Tamiro. Thanks so much for listening. There are so many ways you can spend your time. I do appreciate you spending it right here with me. Thanks to everyone who makes this show possible. I will talk to you real soon.